Let's get out our Bibles this evening and turn to 1 Corinthians. We're in chapter 6, and we'll pick up our study in verse 12 as we continue through this book. 1 Corinthians 6. How many of you were at first service last week? Raise your hands. Okay, Casey misspoke. You've got to get the word out. We never, probably for at least the last 10 years or so, have taken away that extra hour of sleep from any of you. And he got it right the second two services, but first service, he said we were going to, you know, change our clocks. Well, we never change our clocks. You know that by now. But most of you probably know that. And probably you second service people that are here tonight, you go, he goofed up. Because we don't change our clocks until after the service, because the Bible said God gives his beloved sleep. And I'll bet all of you would rather lose it in the middle of the day than in the morning, or most of you anyhow. So that's what we're going to let you do, okay? So get the word out. If you know service about first people, you know, I mean, people from first people from service, if you know. So who's having a problem speaking? Me. Let them know that we're, you know, they'll just get here a little early and they'll be kind of angry probably. And I'm sending Casey here first to lock up or to unlock an hour early. I told him he ought to get coffee and donuts for such an announcement for those that come that early. So try and appease them. But anyhow, so just get the word out there. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 tonight. Beginning at verse 12, what we are going to look here at in our study of 6, really carrying through chapter 7, we're going to deal with the issue of Christian liberty and sexuality. You're going in church, huh? Yeah, this may be a little bit of an R-rated study. So, warning for those of you that have children. Maybe cover their ears or, you know, this is going to work. I mean, we're going to talk about it. Because I'll tell you what, the world's talking about it. Problem is many times the world's talking about it and getting out all its perverted information. And I don't say that we should talk about it, you know, in a crude manner or anything. But you know what? We need to talk about what God created. He created sex. And guess what? It's his thing. It's his plan. And there's a proper way and a proper time and an improper way and an improper time. There is sex that enslaves and sex that can be enjoyed in the confines of marriage. And so Paul is going to talk about that tonight in our text here. And we have seen in this church in Corinth, there are certainly plenty of problems here. And listen, when I share tonight the perspective on sex that the Bible sets forth, unless you're a Christian, guess what? You're not going to agree with me. You're going to say, what do you know? I mean, come on, man. See, only Jesus Christ can give you the right perspective on life, period, and sexuality, certainly. There are plenty of people out there in the world today that rationalize, even among the Christians, that rationalize their sexual activity. And I have counseled them, sadly, those who say, well, I know that I'm not supposed to divorce my wife, but I've fallen in love with this woman or with this man. And so, you know what? I'm going to get a divorce. It just feels so right. So how can you tell me it's wrong when it feels so right? Quoting the popular verse of a song by Debbie Boone years ago. How can it be wrong when it feels so right? Well, you can't trust your feelings, so there's a lot of stuff that, like, could be wrong that feels right. And in fact, the Word of God lets us know that, hey, when it comes to liberty, when it comes to sexuality, we can't just afford to kick back. There's this attitude that exists in our culture. I don't know if you've caught it. But the attitude goes something like this. What's the big deal about sex? It's only biology, right? I mean, we're only animals after all, and you don't get upset when dogs do it and when cats do it. And so why should you get upset when we do it? I'm just a biological thing, man. Don't get all uptight about it. It's normal. Well, that's what the Corinthians were saying. It's normal. And this city of Corinth, when it comes to sensuality and sexuality, it was certainly the Las Vegas of that time. In fact, there was a phrase that said to Corinthianize, which meant to have sex with a prostitute. That's how ingrained, that's how prevalent and prominent sex was, prostitution was in this city. And Paul, as he seeks to deal with the problems in this church, what he realizes, what we have seen, is these people coming from this city, living in this lifestyle, once they gave their lives to the Lord, they tended to bring over some of the stuff from the old ways. And so Paul here is seeking and been seeking to set things right. In the first four chapters, Paul dealt with the problems of division in the church. You know why they were divided in church over human leaders? And I'm of Paul and I'm of Apollos. Because you see, in the world, I follow this party, I follow that party, I follow this man, I follow this philosophy. You see, they brought that over into their Christianity. In chapter 5, the evil in the church where the guy was having relations with his stepmother, you see, seducing the wife of his father, or vice versa. We're not sure who made the first move. But they said, hey, you know what? We're a tolerant people. And the toleration, you see, of every evil and weirdness, you see, in many ways, they brought it into the church with them. And Paul had to correct that. In chapter 6 that we saw last time together, we saw them going to courts, secular courts, suing one another. The Corinthian society, a very litigious society. Well, these people just carried that same kind of idea into their Christian experience, you see. Thus, no surprise to us, no newsflash, that once we see these people in this city practicing the kind of immorality that was being practiced in this city, it is par for the course so far in our study, that they would also try and rationalize and justify this kind of sexual immorality going on and misunderstandings about marriage and liberty and everything there, you see. And so Paul sets out to take their rationalization of sin and set it right, you see. To show why sexual sin must be dealt with in the Christian life, even though we are free in grace. Paul is going to tell them tonight in our text that sexual sin, you don't want to mess around there. Because number one, it harms. Number two, it controls. And number three, it perverts the body. Sexual sin harms and controls and perverts the body. Paul starts off in verse 12 and he says, all things are lawful unto me, but all things are not expedient. Paul says, hey, there's nothing that's illegal. When it comes to the grace of God, hey, we're free. Know the truth, the Bible says, and the truth will set you free. There's nothing you can do to save yourself. You don't, and here's a mentality that exists, and we've got to deal with this. You don't say, you don't come to the Lord and give your life to Jesus Christ and become His child and then say, okay, now I'm saved and I'm born again, my sin forgiven, I have the hope of heaven, now I gotta keep myself saved by doing certain deeds. No, that's a wrong understanding. You see, there's no deeds that you can do that's going to save you. That's what Jesus said on the cross. What did He say there? It is what? Finished. Nothing you can do to save yourself. Nothing you can do to keep yourself saved. He who has begun a good work in you will continue to perform it until He comes. Correct? Nothing you can do to save yourself. So we need to get that kind of mentality out of our mind. But listen, if you're a Christian, there are practices and things that you can engage in once you're saved that will bring blessing and bring just wonderful things into your life. There are things that you can engage in that will bring you devastation. Though your soul saved, you know what? Your life wasted. Is that the way you want to live? Paul says, yeah, you're free. But there are things that as a Christian, if you engage in these things, it's not expedient. They will not profit you at all, you see. God will forgive you. There's not a sin that you can commit that God won't forgive you for. But if you do things that are not profitable, those things that are sinful can bring you into bondage. The price is high. If you as a Christian are in some kind of immorality presently, if you have committed or are committing adultery or having sex outside of marriage presently, yes, God will forgive you totally and completely by the blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. You are forgiven by His grace, but there will be, make no mistake, a price to pay in this life. There's harm built into sin. James McDonald says it, you choose to sin, you choose to suffer. That's just the way it is for the believer. There's harm built into it. And I want you to turn over with me because for our time together, I think there's enough misinformation about our sexuality and what is permissible and allowable that we really need to see the kind of trap we can get ourselves into. So I want you to keep your finger there in 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We'll come back to that, but I want you to flip over to the book of Proverbs in the Old Testament there into chapter 5. Because Solomon goes to great lengths, and who would know better the trap of sexual sin? Sexual sin has certainly destroyed more people and families and homes than drug or alcohol together have destroyed. And here in Proverbs chapter 5, we have some very practical instruction and warning set forth. The idea there in verse 1 is it's a father, and who's he talking to? His son. Hey, dads, what about it? You know, I'll tell you what. Let me just tell you something, guys. I do a lot of the pre-marriage counseling here at the church. In fact, everybody that gets married here at the church, just about, I have been involved in the last counseling session. Guess what my session is, because none of the other guys wanted to deal with it. For those of you that have got married here, you know what my session is. And you're going, I can't believe he's talking about this like this with us here. Mine deals with the budget, money, and sex. You know what I found out? It's kind of heartbreaking. Many of you have not talked to your teenage children about sex. Not discussed much in the home. Nothing much said about it at all. Not really free to answer questions. Indeed, uncomfortable. Oh, yeah. But no excuse for negligence. Many of your children get their information from their friends, what they see on TV, what they hear being discussed by others, you see. And that's a shame. You got kids right now that are of age, and you haven't had the talk. And dads, your daughters need to hear how men are. Men are different. Not bad, just different. Now, sometimes women think they're bad because they're different, and vice versa, you know. But they're different, and you got to talk to your daughters about the differences so that they understand when they wear certain things, when they do certain things, that, you know what, it's going to be a problem. And because they're so beautiful, I used to tell my daughter, I tell my other daughter now, I say, you know, you're so beautiful, hon. The guys don't need any other distraction. They don't need it amped up a bit. Just you looking the way you do is the way God has made you. You don't need to, you know, wear, so you need to be careful. While it may be cute to you and mom, dad, is it cute? I don't want to fight mom and her. That's a formidable foe. I'd agree. Okay, I'd agree. It's a formidable foe. Let me tell you, your daughter's purity is worth the fight. Her testimony is worth the fight. We need to not turn into wackos, okay? Let's not turn into, okay, unless it's got like a collar up to your top of your head and it's a bag, you can't wear it. No, we don't want to go there. But we need to give loving, not harsh, not, what are you, looking like a hooker tonight, you know, I mean, that goes a long ways, that's good, very, very nicely said. I go, you know, that, endearing to both mom and daughter when you say any statement like that, you know. No. But, you know, you've got to give them your input. Honey, you look beautiful in that, and very beautiful in that, and kind of to the point of distraction in that. Because here's what guys struggle with. And they struggle with that no matter what you're wearing to a certain extent anyhow. But this really accentuates that struggle. Because you're so beautiful. So, sweetheart, you know what? I'm going to ask you to change that. Oh, but man, then I'll get in trouble. Yeah. But again, it's worth the fight. You want their purity. You want them to be holy. You want them to be godly. You don't want them to stumble, the brothers. And like I said, there are brothers that are stumbled just by, you know, seeing a woman in a full coat, and, you know, and they're just looking to stumble. Some guys. But he lays out some very practical wisdom here in Proverbs 5. Father talking to a son. He says, pay attention to my wisdom in verse 1. Lend your ear to my understanding. And note why. That you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. If there was ever a day when we need discretion, today's the day. Now is the time. We need people with discretion. Proper understanding of what's right and what's wrong, and what is going to create a problem, and how to look and be, you know, holy and a godly example, you see, and then what is not. And so we need that discretion. Our lips need to share the knowledge that God has granted to us through His Word. Don't keep our children in the dark. Don't let them be ignorant when it comes to sexuality and sensuality. Our lips give them knowledge. As our lips share the life and the Word of God with them. Now note what he says. He's talking to his son here. And he says, for the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. Now, listen, he's talking here to a son, a father to a son. If it was a father to a daughter, he'd go the other way, okay? So you kind of have to get a little creative here and look at both sides. He talks about an immoral woman or an immoral man, as the case may be, whose lips drip honey. Oh man, you're so beautiful. If I was your husband, I would never do anything wrong. I would always treat you wonderfully. We would never argue. Look, we don't argue now here at the office. You're so beautiful, so wonderful. You see, that's what he's talking about. Honey dripping lips. Always got sweetness to share, you see. And smooth. Her mouth is smoother than oil. Smooth talking man. Or as the old song, sweet talking guy. You know, they're just smooth with their words, man. They just have the right thing to say. And man, they just, you're kind of enamored with them. You're kind of taken by them. You're going, oh, speak to me. Talk to me. Oh, I love to hear that. You see, the father is saying to his son, watch out for that flattery and that smooth talking stuff. Those little words of honey. Why? Because look at what's behind them, verse 4. But in the end, starts out good, starts out sweet, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. It may sound good, and you know what? I have seen these scenes unfold. He was so nice to me. He was much nicer to me than my husband. He was the nicest guy I ever met, even though he wasn't a Christian. And I've never met a Christian man who was as nice as he was and as accommodating as he is. Well, that's the way it starts. But then the rings go on. They didn't seek the Lord out. They didn't get married at church. They just ran off to Vegas. Cheaper, you know. And then they come in and they're counseling and, well, what's the matter? He's not what he appeared to be. I didn't know he was drinking like he is. I didn't know that he was doing the drugs and he hangs out with his friends and he comes home and he hits me and yells and screams at me. Yeah. You know what the Bible says? You see, the warning is right here. What you see is not what you get. That's what Solomon is warning his son about. Don't just listen to what they say and the sweetness they convey. But hey, is it the Lord's will? Is it God's heart? Is it a godly woman or a godly man? Now he gives a little advice because of this. Not what you see is not what you get. He says, lest you ponder her path of life, her ways are unstable, and you don't know them. You're listening, you're hearing the words, but you don't take the time to look at the path of her life or his life. Their ways are unstable. You don't know them. You don't know these people. You haven't seen them. Well, we haven't, you know, when I ask a couple, and if you come into us and you're going through the pre-marriage counseling, and if by some chance you get to me and I ask you if you've ever had an argument, a disagreement, or a fight, and if you tell me no, I might say, wait. Why? Because if you've not had a fight, and I'm not saying knock down, drag out. Maybe fight is the wrong word. A firm or heated disagreement. How's that? Does it sound a little better? If you haven't had some of that action, I'm thinking you don't really know them. They're putting on an act because reality is. And you've not got there yet. When you get two sinners close together, it's like two porcupines backing up to each other. You're going to get poked every once in a while. There's going to be a little heat there. You see, you need to know them. You need to watch their ways. You see, knock off the missionary dating. Well, you know, he's not a Christian, but he asked me out and I just said, well, meet me at church. And while that's a good thing, you need to move him from you very quickly once he gets to church to a brother in the Lord, to the men's Bible study fellowship, to a pastor, you see, if he's a guy, so that he doesn't just come to church because of you. Many a man has come to church because of a beautiful woman and got saved. Okay, I'm not saying. But be careful that they get saved. And that's going to take some time, you see. And probably you stepping back out of the picture is the priority. The Lord needs to be the priority in their life. So you can see their path. It's a path, you see, of seeking the Lord and not seeking you. So important. He says, therefore, hear me now, my children, in verse 7, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. He goes on here in verse 8. He says, remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. You know, you're not going to have a problem committing adultery with somebody if you don't go where they are. Huh? How's that sound? For those of you that are married, and I'm telling you this and I'm warning you right here, right now, with this word. But My wife and this guy are such good friends that she works with. Yeah? How much time do they spend together? Well, they work a lot after work and that. And, you know, they go a lot of places and, you know, she works with him. And listen, if there's a lot of time spent with a member of the opposite sex that is not your husband or your wife, alone, together, working, you better wake up. Man, that's a prescription for problems. And that's a warning. That's a warning for you. Now, if there's other people around and they work together and there's an office with other people, then you know what? Still watch. Make sure there's not too many hours spent after work. You know what? Don't be dumb. And I'm not saying you walk around suspicious, calling them in. I'm going to see what they're doing. I'm going to get a camera and put it in his lunchbox and an internet camera. I'm going to hook up to his computer. Don't go wacky on me, okay? But be careful. If they're spending a lot of time talking about this other person, and then they start inviting this other person over to the house on the regular basis, just be careful. Whether it's male or female, depending on the situation, of course, whether the spouse is male or female, but the member of the opposite sex, watch out. Don't whack out, but watch out. He says, if you're to remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house, doesn't take a lot of brains to figure that out, lest you give your honor to others in verse 9 and your years to the cruel one. You see what happens when you fall into sin from failing to heed the warning that is being set out in God's word to protect your marriage, to protect your purity. If you start hanging around their house and spending a lot of time alone together in the car or in the house, you know what? You can run into problems. And when you fall sexually, and Solomon knew this, you see, as he's talking to his son, it's not hard to do. When that happens, you give your honor to others and your years to the cruel one. That's what happens, isn't it? How many senators have we seen recently lose their honor, their respect, because they didn't pay any attention to these words of Solomon? Respect is lost for these men because of their disregard for their bride and their family. The scene politically is littered with men in that way. The church, sadly, even among pastors, is littered the highways with men who have lost their honor, lost their respect. Instead of being with honored people, they wind up with cruel people. He goes on here and he says, lest aliens be filled with your wealth. What the Solomon is saying here, he says, listen, a person could actually come to the place where he loses his fortune. And many a man has destroyed his life over a woman. And he's saddled with paying so much in alimony and child support that he can hardly live himself, because he chose to go down a road, or she chose to go down a road, that God warns us against. All of your money is going out. Verse 10, it says, and your labors there again at the end there go to the house of a foreigner, stranger. You're away from them. They're not with them any longer. You're sending the money off. You're sending the money away. You're aliens one to another because of immorality. And he goes, and you mourn at last when your flesh and your body are consumed. Get to the end of your life and you mourn. Many people end up, you know, they get a divorce from their spouse, they get lured away, and don't pay attention to these words, and they go down the road of adultery. And this woman's different, and this is going to be different. Only to look back and say, what a mess I've made. I should have stayed with my wife, my husband. Mourning. What it's done to the family, what it's done to the children. Not any happier, not any more fulfilled. Because they ignore these words of Solomon. You're old, your body consumed. You can't function anymore physically. And there comes a time. Listen, there comes a time. I'm told that you can't function anymore sexually. When that time comes, you see, if that's been the draw and the main thing, and that's only what is, that's the depth of what you share, you see, you will mourn and you will have nothing but pain and agony and bitter memory. And then you will say, verse 12, how I have hated instruction and my heart despised correction. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. What a fool that I did what I did, is the basic attitude. Now look, lest you think God is against sex. Yeah, here comes a regular preaching religious view on sex. No, 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 no. God is not against sex. He invented it. How do I know? Well, look at verse 18. Let your fountain be blessed. A little R-rated. That's talking about, let me see if I can couch it in the right words. A man's ability to procreate. How's that? Fountain be blessed. Okay? And rejoice, he says, with the wife of your youth. Married people? Married people. Married people. Hey, fool around. Have a good time. Explore your sexuality. Enjoy the sensuality in marriage. That is God's design. And certainly sex is an awesome and wonderful and fun and enjoyable thing that God has blessed us with. A beautiful gift. I told you it was going to be a little R-rated. Because we move from the man's ability to procreate to verse 19. As a loving deer and graceful doe. In other words, you see the deer and the doe. That's just, they speak of tenderness. Just, you know, cruising around and prancing around. And the beauty and the smoothness and the gracefulness of the moves. And when you see a little doe or a deer, not a buck as it can be terrifying, but a doe or a deer, you know what? They're just so... So you're not going, I'm freaked out, you know. You're going, oh, aren't they beautiful? That's the picture of the wife. Just that beauty and that grace, you see, and graceful way of moving, and how she kind of moves a little bit more flowy than us guys. Us guys are like, you know, and the girls are like, you know, they're just kind of... It's true, they're different, aren't they? You can tell by the walk generally. It's true. Isn't it true? Or am I just like making this stuff up? Generally, there are exceptions. He says, of your wife, let her breasts satisfy you at all times and always be enraptured with her love. Solomon says, hey, enjoy. And of course, he's telling what he particularly favored. I mean, here in the scene. And always be enraptured with her love. Just be enraptured. Man. Just the whole idea is, oh man, she's awesome. Oh, she's beautiful. Check her out. And you can check her out. You can take your wife and look at her from the back and from the side. It's all right. It's okay. Be enraptured with her, man. Every moment that you think about her, how much you love her and how much you enjoy her and how much you want to be with her and engage in that pleasure, you see, sexually. Now that doesn't mean, guys, listen, now you women are going, oh brother, now you've done it. No, guys, just a little kind of word of warning here. That doesn't mean that every time you touch her or kiss her, it has to end up in sex, all right? You know, you need to be affectionate, though, and enraptured with her in the sense of knowing her, understanding her, caring for her, you see, and nurturing her. And you see, if you show her that non-sexual attention and affection and are just treating her kindly and rubbing her shoulders, you see, and just telling her what a beauty she is, guess what happens, though? She starts going, man, this guy is hot. I mean, that's what God has created. He's created sex. And for it to be enjoyed in that way. Go for it. Get with it. Enjoy it. And then he says, for why, in verse 20, should you, my son, be enraptured by an immoral woman and be embraced in the arms of a seductress? Why would you prostitute your attention, your time, your love notes, your flowers, your imagination? Why would you prostitute it on some other person? It should be, how can I better love him, love her? Oh, what kind of imagination, what kind of things could I do? And how can I, freshen up and reignite and keep burning the flame? What creativity? Get the creativity juices flowing. I know you guys are going, yeah, I did, man. I asked if you want to go to Outback last night. When? When I got home? Well, it may be good. It's not great, but it's good. It may be a start for some. But think of ways that you can show your love. Ask God, God, you've given me a mind. You are the creator. Isn't he the creator? He's the creator, right? And you look around, he did a pretty good job. You got to admit. And you don't get too bored if you look around at the creation, because it changes up, man, doesn't it? It changes. I mean, and the sky changes and the clouds roll in and the snow falls and the rains fall and the colors come out and the flowers and pretty creative, isn't he? If you need a little help in the romance area, guys. There's a God who got it. He's got it dialed in. And there's a book, Song of Solomon, that he's put in the book, the Bible, that's really a manual on romance. You want to see romance? Look at the Song of Solomon. Be careful. If you're single, don't. Until you're married. If you're married, by all means, do. Especially us guys who can kind of not be too good at romance. You see, the woman likes a plan. She likes it when you've thought, taken some time to plan it out. Spur of the moment's fun sometimes, but if every time is spur of the moment where, hey, let's go to Outback, No, no. If you plan like a weekend, like getaway, or hey, you know what? Let's go up to the mountains, or let's go down to the beach, and you've made this plan, and when you get there, you've got a room, and of course you plan to take her for dinner, and then the room or flowers, and I mean, there's stuff you can do. And you know what? That's where, and I'm getting ahead. I'm kind of blowing at us this out because I'm teaching on marriage on Sunday morning, and you guys are going to go, oh, he's getting in the same sermon he did on Wednesday. But we need to be creative and expend our energy in investing in our precious bride or our precious groom. You see, so important. He goes on here, and he says, for the ways of a man, verse 21, are before the eyes of the Lord. He ponders all his paths. Why would you go off and God knows what you're doing, man, every waking moment. And that the idea here is he's watching. He's watching. He knows what you're doing. You need to pay attention that you're doing what he would have you do. Let's move here ahead to chapter 6. Practical stuff. Listen to this. Verse 23. He says, for the commandment is a lamp and the law a light. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. God's law is going to put you on the right path. It's going to light the path before you so you don't fall into a destructive, you know, sinkhole or something that will suck you into it. He says, hey, don't do that. In fact, he's lighted your way so that you can be kept from the, verse 24, evil woman, from the flattering tongue of a seductress or a seduct man. I don't know how you would say that. Seductor, that would be it, maybe. He says, don't lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you, in verse 25, with her eyelids. Watch out for those eyes. Have you ever noticed the sex symbols? What do they always do, man? Like they always, and I'm not down like on eyeliner and eyeshadow, and I'm not like singling anybody out here, okay? So don't get that idea. But the one thing I've noticed is the seductress types, you know, they do the eyes kind of half shut, you know, and then they got the false eyelashes on, big old long false eyelashes. Makeup just smeared on, you know, eyes here, now, you know. And this always half kind of open. So something about the, I mean, he's saying that, the eyelids there, just something he's noticed, something he's observed. He says, watch out. Watch out. Don't let her allure you with her batting her eyes. Oh, you know. Poor me. I need your help. You save me. Don't let her allure you with that. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. Verse 26. Someone is privileged and honored as man is. How's that, you ask? He is created in the image of God. We have the stamp of God upon us. We are not God. Don't misunderstand. We are created as the highest. We are the ones that are to, well, we're to rule. You see, we're not animals. And that's what he's saying here. You're not just an animal. You're higher, you're superior, you're made in the image of God. And when you get stuck and when you get lured away into sexual sin, what happens is it says here, for by means of a harlot, a man is what? Reduced to nothing more than a crust of bread. Brought down as if he was nothing but a piece of dry, crusty bread. Wasted life. He says, and an adulteress will prey upon his precious life. Verse 26b there. And can a man take fire into his bosom and clothes not be burned? In other words, you think you're going to commit sexual sin and get away? You're wrong. The picture is pretty obvious, isn't it? There doesn't need to be much commentary. Is it possible for man to grab onto a burning fire and put it in his chest, put it on his chest and come out unscathed? The answer? No, not at all. You do that, you're going to get burned. Can't take fire into your bosom without burning your clothes, without burning yourself. Can one, in verse 28, go on hot coals and his feet not be seared? So is he who goes, in verse 29, into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her shall not be innocent. Whoever commits adultery, verse 32, with a woman lacks understanding. He who does so destroys his own soul. Stupidity of committing adultery. Why? Because it destroys your soul. God may forgive you, yes, but that doesn't make it right and it doesn't make it smart. Proverbs 7, verse 5, moving on, says, say to wisdom, or verse 4, say to wisdom, you are my sister. And call understanding your nearest kin. In other words, grab wisdom and man, make her close to you. Bring her in. And understanding, man, be friends there. Get related to understanding. That they may keep you, verse 5, from the immoral woman, from the seductress who flatters with her words. Wisdom will keep you from the strange woman. Keep you from the one who does not belong to you, who flatters with their mouth, with their words. Then he gives an illustration here. Verse 6. This is Solomon peering out his window. For at the window of my house, I looked through my lattice. And I saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding. Translation, a stupid young person. Well, they come packaged in old too. But here he is, he's watching, he's seeing a young man that is stupid. He was, verse 8, passing, and why he was stupid, he was passing along the street near her corner. Note that, young people, single people, men. The problem, what is it? He's in trouble already. Why? He's passing near her corner. Whose corner? The seductress. Hey, guess what? They're still on the corners, aren't they? Still talk about the streetwalkers, don't they? There they are in the corners. He's near her corner. This stupid guy going down the street, a young guy, doesn't have any sense. I'm not going to really do anything. I just want to see if she's there. When I drove by yesterday, she was attractive to me. I'm not really going to do anything. I just want to look, you see. Yeah. A passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path. You get near the corner, and the next thing you know, you're on the path. You see a progression. You see in it? A progression here. I'm not going to go in. I'm not really going to go with her. I'm just going to pass by. And then he ends up on a path. And that path goes where? To her house. And in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. Oh, nighttime, huh? Nobody will know. Nobody will see me. The light is off. Nobody has to know. The old what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas mentality. And there, in verse 10, a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. Again, the dress is brought out. She was dressed the part. She looked the part. She was seeking to attract attention of the male by accentuating the sensual. That's great with your husband in private. It is something that'll get you in trouble. Out. This woman not only was dressed the part, but she had a crafty heart. She was loud. Verse 11, and rebellious. Her feet wouldn't stay at home. Verse 12, at times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, I have peace offerings with me today. I have paid my vows. So I came to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love. Catch the scene. I don't know if you caught this. I don't know if in the text you see this, but this woman was one who was loud. She wasn't afraid to say how she felt. She was in rebellion to God. She wasn't one who stayed at home and took care of the home and poured her effort and energy into the home. She would go out and she was always cruising around and hanging mostly at the malls and the shopping centers and the street corners. And check this out. She caught this guy. She grabbed him and kissed him with no shame, with a boldness, a seductive look on her face. And listen to this. Check this out, lest you miss it. I have peace offerings with me today. I have paid my vows. What's that mean? Religious. Peace offerings. Paid vows. I am a very religious person. I have been to church today, if you would. I have said my prayers today, if you would. Huh? Be careful. Christian man, be careful. Be prayerful. It's not the woman dressed in maybe for many of you the prostitution outfit. It's the woman that comes to you, oh, my husband doesn't properly treat me, and you're so kind and so godly and so wonderful. Will you talk to me? Will you counsel me? Will you please help me? And you know what? You never intended for anything to happen. But you start talking and you start sharing, and then, oh, you know what? That's so wonderful, so godly. Would you talk to me again tomorrow? I need help. I need counsel. I need your prayers, and nobody can counsel me like you. And she goes to church. Watch out. He goes to church. Ladies, same for you. Watch out. Oh, you're such a godly woman, and my wife is struggling, and can you just tell me what you think I should do in this situation? Because she's a problem here. She gets angry with me. She's not like you. You see, that's the warning here. Beautiful place she's got. Smells good. Everything looks good. So romantic is it. It's all decked out. Come and listen. Let us take our fill of what? What's it say there in verse 18? Let us take our fill of love, baby. You don't want the love train. That ain't what it is. But that's what the world calls it, isn't it? It's called lust. It's called perverted passion. Let us delight ourselves, but she calls it with love. Has nothing to do, like Tina said. Love has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with simply your passions and self-centered, satisfying actions, you see. And attractions. Sounds good. It sounds enticing, but it's all a matter of lies. And the fact of the matter is, and I need to stop, huh? It's 8:36. I didn't even realize that. And I'll bet you tonight you didn't realize it either. Because we're talking about a topic. But she says, I'll close with this. For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day. Now, this is a stupid kid. And with her enticing speech, she caused him to yield in verse 21. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. And immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter, or as a fool to the correction of the stocks. Like a wise man. Does he go after her like a wise man and experience fulfillment? No, he goes as a fool to the correction of the stocks till an arrow is stuck in his liver and a bird hastens to the snare. He did not know it would cost his life. Fool he was and is. Yes, God will forgive, but it isn't going to help you. To do this, it will harm you, it will destroy you, it will tear you. Proverbs 17 says, stolen waters are sweet. A stolen waters are sweet. In Proverbs 9, verse 17, it says, and the bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he, in verse 18 of Proverbs 9, he does not know that the dead are there, that her guests are in the depths of hell. It's devastating. It will destroy you. And you ultimately, it may bring the end of life to you. It's no secret that there are diseases today that you can get as you engage in this promiscuity, in this sexuality that is not with your husband or your wife, faithful in monogamy, that can get you in trouble and take your life from you. Save soul, perhaps. Wasted life? Certainly. God would spare us. Not only does the sin of adultery harm us, it controls us. And we'll look at that next time together. So it'll continue to be a bit R-rated. But it'll be a bit more toned down next time. Let's pray. Oh, Father, we thank you, Lord, for your word, for the work of your Spirit to minister your word to our hearts.